Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
This is the Ben Burnett Show, the only show in America that features a one-term has-been retired politician that nobody knows.
Welcome into the Ben Burnett Show. My name is Ben Burnett. My guests today are Alpharetta Department of Public Safety Chief John Robison and the Chief of Police for the Dunwoody Police Department, Billy Grogan. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you
Glad
for having us.
Here.
What you guys don't know is that you hear all the time and you don't necessarily know, but this studio's pretty awesome here at the Battery.
It is. I've heard about it because I'm a big 680 listener and 106.3 as well, but especially 680. So I'm familiar with the new digs and how much they talk about it on air. How blessed they are to have such a great great studio, for sure. And I can see why.
It is. I can't believe they let me in here, Chief. Talk to me about your time in Dunwoody, career in law enforcement. You know, how you decide to move into leadership and really what the nuts and bolts of your daily job are.
Sure, I'd be happy to. I've been a police officer for 40 years. I started at the Marietta Police Department. It wasn't my really idea for a career. I was going to be a pharmacist. And
well, that's different.
That is very different. And I realized that science was not my cup of tea. And so I ended up joining the Marietta Police Department because a friend had an uncle that worked there and talked to me about the job. And I spent 28 years there and really started being interested in moving into a leadership role because, you know, you see things and you think, I'd love to do things differently. And, you know, you want to maybe do things better and have more influence in the organization. And so, you know, I moved into different leadership roles at Marietta. Ultimately, I was a deputy chief there. And then had the fortunate opportunity to apply for the job at Dunwoody and got that job as the chief in 2008. And, you know, it's really interesting to build a department from scratch because you can establish the culture. There's not a history there. You don't have bad habits, so to speak. And so it was really a great opportunity. Of course, I couldn't blame the previous guy for any trouble we had. But it's been a great run at the police department, and it's been an awesome opportunity.
How have you seen in your time in Dunwoody in the last 12, 13 years, how have you seen that area change, and how have you seen what are the changes that have taken place in law enforcement in general, but specific to your community? Because so many of my listeners love local government, and I think the thing that was so interesting about the opportunity to come to Dickey Broadcasting is I will always firmly believe this. There are plenty of people who are going to listen to my show for the first time. The things that happen to you at home are always the most important. They may not always be on Fox News, and if they are, the local issues almost always involve law enforcement. But how have you seen, specific to Dunwoody, that community ebb and flow, change, right, wrong, or indifferent? You know, talk about your experiences and the things that you deal with today that you didn't necessarily deal with, you know, a decade plus ago.
Sure. Well, I think really the one of the shifts is in demographics. Dunwoody has shifted, become more diverse. You know, if you talk to some people, they still think Dunwoody's predominantly white. by a large majority, but actually when you look at the census, we're pretty diverse, and so that's changed over the last 10 years. Also, crime has kind of changed for us. We've, you know, having Perimeter Mall, 10 million square feet of office space, we always have had, you know, quite a bit of property crimes, you know, thefts and people breaking in cars and things like that. We've seen a shift over the last several years with COVID and 2021 and 22 with more serious crime, violent crime. And we just had a double homicide a couple of weeks ago. And so that's been kind of an unwelcome shift in kind of some of the things that we're having to deal with from the police department perspective.
I will call him Chief Robinson, but in a text message, I call him John. So for those of you who don't know, I sat on the city council from 2018 to the end of 2021. So we're around the 4th of July now, and John has been rid of me for about 6 months, and as my podcast has just absolutely exploded. And so you remember the show when the accommodations were not necessarily as Ritz-Carlton like as we sit in today.
Yes.
Talk to me about what you see, because I know that you and Chief Grogan can sit here and answer a lot of questions the same way. But I think what is interesting about both of your communities, which represents so much of the 106.3 listener base that goes more or less from here up the river. And we love Paulding County, too. In fact, both of these guys live in West Cobb. We're going to ask them to give their addresses later. And so I wanted to ask you, you know, you referenced COVID, Chief Grogan. How have you seen the job change from that perspective, whether it was COVID, whether it was everything else? What do you deal with today that you didn't deal with three-ish years ago?
The timing of COVID, of course, there's no good time to have a pandemic, but you had COVID. You also had the George Floyd situation that happened nationally, and you know, of course, we saw what happened here in Atlanta. So you combine those two things, and it definitely created a unique stress we have not seen before in our profession. And listen, I want to be clear, you know, as bad as what we've seen in some parts of the country and some of the law enforcement rhetoric that's out there, and I think Chief Grogan would say the same thing, we are very well supported where we work, and we're very grateful to have communities that do take care of us and appreciate what we try to do for the community. So I can't relate to some of the issues that we see out there nationally, but what I can say is that the dynamic of people wanting to get in this profession has certainly changed, and that seemed to start happening drastically during that time. Now more than ever, and again, any chief you talk to is going to tell you the same thing. We are struggling not only to draw good candidates into the profession, but keep the good ones that we have. I can remember back in 2011, I was lieutenant over special services in Alpharetta, and that part of my job was professional standards, and we did hiring. And I remember the first hiring I did, we only tested once a year. And we had four openings, and we had approximately 160 people show up to apply for four openings. Now, you know, we're lucky to get 5-10 good quality candidates when we have a test, and we test regularly now as well. So the challenge that we have that we saw really starting to heighten during the COVID time and during, again, the George Floyd and things like that that were going on is not only, again, drawing those good candidates in, but keeping good candidates long term. It's just a different time now, and I believe that this is not something that's going to change anytime soon, if ever. I think we're just in a new world now when it comes to law enforcement, and this is going to be an ongoing challenge for us moving forward, trying to attract and keep good personnel.
One of the things I'm going to ask you a loaded question, Chief Grogan, but it's a positive loaded question. And John had referenced the ability to be well supported in a city that I would say is equally left of center and equally right of center. Your elected officials are by and large all conservative leaning people. We all have a libertarian streak in us somewhere, but I would say Dunwoody, just knowing what I read in the paper and who gets elected and the policies and procedures that get put forward, is slightly left of center. And I think that's a pretty fair statement. But you would say that you feel equally supported by the people who live in Dunwoody who happen to be left-leaning.
Oh, absolutely. When I'm speaking with a candidate that that's interested in coming to our department always talk about a couple things. One is that we work in a area where the community supports us, and that happened on day one and it hasn't stopped since. And always tell them that the reason is we're not out there treating people disrespectfully. We're sure. treating the public correctly, how they should be treated. We're not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but by and large, we do the right thing the majority of the time. Second thing is we have...
Almost always.
Yeah, almost always.
I'll even go further.
Yeah, and the second thing is we have a very supportive mayor and council and my boss, the city manager, and that's so important to any police department because, and when I say they're supportive verbally, but they're also supportive with the budget. And that's where the council lays out their priorities for the city. And the safety of the citizens of Dunwoody is the number one priority of the council. And they demonstrate that by the budget they provide for us to get things done and when I ask for things that we need.
Well, and I think what's interesting about that is that you saw the city of Atlanta 2 years ago take an entirely different direction, and they have not recovered. And while they have hundreds of vacancies that can take place, that's a delta that I don't know unless you have a severe depression and wild unemployment. Guys, I wouldn't want to work somewhere in law enforcement where I would ever feel in that way. And I remember reading the emails when they were asking for help from adjacent municipalities because crime was everywhere. There were a series of you know, horrible events that had taken place nationally. And I was afraid for you guys. If you wanted to go work there, like, what if something were to happen? How are you going to be treated by a district attorney that has an axe to grind?
Well, and of course, Ben, you were, you know, on council when this happened, and we had a very specific example of that when the riots were going on in Atlanta that Friday night. We were called and asked to send our SWAT team down, and we did. We sent them down. Many other agencies in the metro area did, and that's what we always want to support our fellow law enforcement, obviously. However, that night is when one of the first two Atlanta-related incidents happened regarding police officers and how there was no due process for an incident they were involved in with a tasing. And then, of course, we saw the Wendy's situation a week later. But after that Friday night and what we saw happen regarding how those officers were not treated appropriately and not given due process, the next day we were called and asked again to send our officers down. And,
hell no.
And we did not, like many other agencies, because I could not, in good conscience, put my officers in a position to where if they do the right thing and have to execute in a use of force incident somehow, that could potentially end up costing them and their career or their livelihood, whatever that may be. And so that was one of the unfortunate things we saw, is that we wanted to help. We wanted to help Atlanta. But like so many agencies, when certain things started happening politically, we couldn't do that.
When you step back from the sensationalism that exists and you realize that the vast majority of police go home, feed their kids, go to baseball practice, they're just people. And I think it's the media sensationalism in both directions. It is the... I love the conversations that you hear in congressional campaigns about so-and-so wants to defund the police, and you hear it from a state perspective. But when you look at the federal government and even the state government, because Brian Kemp and Stacey Abrams will sit here and have a conversation about law enforcement in the coming months, as you look at those conversations, what impact does the federal government or the state government have on how you two individuals run your organizations?
So I think if you look at it from the federal perspective, there was a policy that came out some years ago related to body cameras being used on task force. So some of the drug task force. And because of that, Atlanta PD ended up pulling out of the all the drug task force, and they're the biggest player in Atlanta here
by far,
and so they could come out with policies and laws that maybe don't directly affect us, because we're certainly not enforcing federal laws. On a state level, certainly they could do that. There's federal grants that come out or state grants. They can put restrictions on them. They could set them up in a certain way that does affect us. But really, we're mostly affected by our local ordinances, the policies of our city councils, and how we operate that way.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.
Would you say that that's probably 95% of the things that impact you?
Sure, absolutely. Although, really, state law does. So if, for instance, there's been a push to require body cameras by law for police officers. Now, our agencies have body cameras, and we've had them some years and use them, and they're very effective. I think they, by a large majority, protect police officers.
At 100%.
But they do capture officers when they do things wrong, which is important for us to know as well. But if you mandated that by law, there's a huge cost to body cameras. And, our agencies can afford that, but there's a lot of smaller agencies in Georgia. It would be very difficult for them to be able to afford it.
If I can add, Ben, I will say, talking about state government, talking about Governor Kemp, there is a perception in our state that we are well supported, and I think that does matter. I think it does help. I'm not telling you it's going to make a huge difference in the long run as far as who gets into law enforcement, who doesn't, but just like Chief Grogan and so many of us now, we're looking and we're trying to draw candidates from other states that are coming in. We've hired people from other states where this defund the police thing's been going on, and they're like, I'm getting out of here and I want to go somewhere else. And so, yes, Alpharetta, we're well supported by our citizens, by our city government. But I think it also does help that they know and see on the news that we have a governor and a state government, for the most part, that very much supports law enforcement, even doing the bonus payments they did, things like that. But more than that, just the ongoing appreciation and understanding of the importance of making Georgia a great state, a big part of that, just like making Alpharetta and Dunwoody great cities, is making those cities, and in this case, state, safe.
Let me give you this anecdotal thing that happened. We had an officer about a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years, was struck on the interstate. A vehicle, a DUI driver, plowed into his vehicle, knocked it into him into the woman he had stopped, and so he was injured. And Governor Kemp had saw that on the television, on the news, and he called me. And just out of the blue, called my cell phone.
Were you like, yeah, I know who you are?
Yeah. I'd met him a couple of times, so I recognized his voice right away. And he just said he wanted to check on the officer, that he saw that, and just for me to tell the officer that he's glad he's okay and just thinking about him. And I thought he didn't have to do that.
No.
But he did. And I think that shows, that he is making an intentional effort to support law enforcement.
I totally agree. And that is significant. It is.
I want to ask you guys, because we'll get in the weeds a little bit more with, we talked about not defunding the police or funding the police, but we talked about budgets. And I think most cities, Alpharetta may actually be the exception in that, I think Parks is probably has more funding than law enforcement, which is a sign that you're safe. But besides, I said that to say this: since I have left elected office, the inflationary costs of everything and the cost of living for everyone has increased significantly. And it is not a secret that you two gentlemen represent police departments of cities that have means. And I mean like six-figure, household incomes, you know, they're places that people aspire to live. They're aspirational communities. But a lot of folks in law enforcement are blue collar, have to live somewhere else because of where they come from. But they still pay $5 for gas. Their groceries are still 15, you know, percent more expensive year over year, maybe more. How, and so those of you guys at home who don't know, a local government can't just print trillions of dollars in order to make up a budgetary deficit to make the math work. They are constitutionally bound by state law to have balanced budgets, even the city of Atlanta. And so I think that's a really healthy thing, but everybody has millage rate issues, and with soaring inflation, and people live in Dunwoody, and people live in Alpharetta, and people live in Johns Creek, and they live in Marietta for a reason. How do you guys go make the case, and how is that process working as you get forward to July and a new fiscal year? Because you're either going to have to, I feel horrible for the people who just roll their millage rates back to be revenue neutral every year, and we all know who those municipalities are, but they're to a place now where it's not that it's not a philosophically like conservative great thing to do. It's not possible. How do you guys advocate for your city councils and before your city councils, and what are you willing to give, and what is something that you guys really need to take good care of your people?
First of all, you know, we recognize that, again, public safety is prioritized in both areas where we work. At the same time, we understand that it is a limited amount of money. Yes, we are very blessed financially in the areas that we work in. Alpharetta is a great place and is a very affluent area, no doubt about that. But I also understand that there's still only so much money in the pot that can be used, and it's not just for public safety. That is a priority, number one priority, but roads, infrastructure, all the other things, parks, to your point.
And those are all more expensive, too.
And those are much more expensive. And so, you know, my job is to constantly be an advocate, not only for our department, but also, I guess, be reasonable in that. And that, you know, if I'm coming constantly asking for more money, raises, things like that, that's one thing. But that's not necessarily going to help keep us where we need to be as far as staffing and being able to offer the service we need to offer long term. You were talking about possible solutions. One of the things that we've been talking about more recently, and I think is a broader conversation, not just in our profession, but nationally. I just read an article the other day by Adam Grant talking about how now more than ever, benefits and retirement packages, things like that, are more important than pay when it comes to retention.
No question.
And so for years and years and years, and back, you know, when Chief Grogan got in the profession, you know, and myself, you know, we got in, and part of the reason wasn't, we weren't getting in for the pay, but part of it was, you know, was the benefits that came along with that.
You're not going to be rich, you'll be taken care
exactly,
of.
Exactly. And even still, we have a great, you know, defined contribution retirement now, and I think that's what y'all have as well, DC.
No, it's a benefit. We have to contribute to
it. That's what I'm saying. You have to contribute.
Yes.
But I would still consider it what we have to be good.
Yes. It's a 457 plan.
Correct.
Yeah. It's a retirement plan, y'all.
But unfortunately, we have to start looking at how we can make that more robust, or do things like, how can we possibly create a benefit where when somebody retires, they can pay for health coverage? I mean, health, you know, retiring and trying to get health coverage, as we all know, is astronomical. And so we've got to start, I believe, at not just we as in Alpharetta, we as in this profession, have got to start looking at ways that we can make those kind of benefits more robust, because that's going to have more of a long-term effect on keeping good people here. And I've got a couple folks now that honestly would probably retire tomorrow if they could, but they can't afford it because they can't afford the health insurance.
$2,000 a month for health insurance.
Right. So I think we can't just talk about pay. That is important, and that's a part of what we have to do, but we've got to get more creative and try to figure out how to utilize our resources, our city resources, more towards, and that's not just law enforcement. That's every city employee. I mean, they're all in the same boat as far as that goes.
So Dunwoody's a little different than Alpharetta. Certainly the people are affluent, but we have an undersized budget for several reasons. One, we have a millage rate of 2.74.
Which is very, for those of you listening at home, that is unbelievably low.
And it's really an effective rate of 1.74 because the homes, they get one mill rollback. And so the city is looking at increasing the millage rate, but we're capped by state law to 3.04. So they're looking at that. The second thing is we don't get lost money, which accounts in Fulton County for a significant amount of money. And so we have some challenges budget-wise, but as John said, the mayor and council, I advocate for the needs of our department, and it's up to the decision makers then to make that decision. Now, I like what Chief Robeson said about benefits, and that's one of the things that we've looked at. We have a great medical benefit. The city pays 100%, 90% of family coverage, and we've done that since the very beginning. The other thing that's really been helpful for us is a housing stipend. So you talked about living somewhere else and having to commute. We pay officers $700 a month to live in the city of Dunwoody.
That's like something the military does if you live in a high-impact area.
It's $8,400, and we have about 23 or 24 officers that live in the city, five of which own a house.
You ought to do that, John.
And so that's been,
we have talked about it.
That's been very helpful for us. But it's a constant challenge because you mentioned inflation rate.
It's crazy.
Certainly, we got a 4% across the board raise in October,
which is high.
A 3% in January, and the city manager is taking something to the council in July to give us a 6% raise to try to help keep up with inflation. And so, it's a constant push pull. Mm-hmm. But the problem is when you have a smaller budget and the police department continues to take up a bigger percent of that budget, it becomes unsustainable.
There is no question. I want to shift gears a little bit and talk to you guys about technology, because with gaps in your ability to hire, and every police department that I can possibly think of has deficits for officers, and there's probably more overtime than your people care to work and take, although they probably take all they can. How do you guys leverage technology to make up the shortfall of personnel, or do you?
I can give one great example. I mean, yes, technology often is a force multiplier for us when it comes to allocating resources. And perfect example, for years and years and years, we had complaints constantly about speeding in our school zones. And so we would send officers out there and address that. But, of course, you would have to send, we've got, 13, 14 schools in the city now. And so that's a lot to cover in the mornings and afternoons, especially. So technology that's recently come out, school zone cameras, which we were fortunate, and Billy can talk about, they've had some issues in DeKalb County with that, but we've been fortunate with that. So almost all our schools, we have school zone cameras, and now during school zone hours, at 2 hours in the morning and in the afternoons, we have a camera, and it will capture a tag for somebody that's speeding doing 10 over and during school zone hours.
I've been the benefactor of one of those.
You're one of many, I can assure you.
Yeah, you hear about that occasionally?
Yes, we do. And so, but that does, that technology, so now I've got officers that I would normally need to put at the schools that I can put other places now, because it is important. I mean, obviously we want to keep the school zone safe with our kids, with the teachers, with the parents, and so that is a force multiplier for us. And I always point out, because people immediately bring up, the money that comes in from that, and there is money that comes in from that, but I would tell you as I sit here...
Do you buy toys with it?
No, we would never just buy toys, Ben. You know better than that. I would tell you as I sit here that if we didn't make a dime off that, I would still utilize that technology because of the safer school zones it creates. So that's just one example for us, but yes, we're always looking to utilize technology and for several reasons to help us do our job and more effectively serve our community and keep them safer. But at the same time, that also can help be a force multiplier when it comes to our personnel resources and how we use them.
No, I mean, that's a great example. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to convince the DeKalb County school system to sign off on our application for that in Dunwoody. But we do use other technology, license plate reader technology. A lot of agencies are using those. And so when a bad guy steals a car somewhere and he comes into Dunwoody then to break in cars or whatever, we get an alert and our officers are notified and we're able to catch them. And, I mean, just recently we caught someone who had was wanted for three counts of aggravated assault and burglary from another jurisdiction. We've caught murder suspects, missing persons, stolen cars, all kinds of things. And that's a way to use technology to help point us to where the bad guys are, and it's effective. But, you know, there's technology like just something simple like, you know, officers work extra duty jobs. And, well, used to, you'd send an email out, here's a job, and, you know, you send emails back, and, you know, how much time that takes to coordinate that. Now there's software that does that. And so you just put the job on there, and people can look and sign up for it. It's all electronic. Nobody has to do this back-and-forth thing, which saves a lot of time. That's just a simple example.
I think one of the things that I always had this concern, and so if y'all don't know, I was when the license plate readers came up, I was the one vote who said no, and I was really grateful. Whatever it was, 2 years later, and I said, "Hey, man, have you ever pulled? How many open records requests do you get? And do you remember how many there were?"
It wasn't many. I can't remember the number. I do remember you requesting
it
that.
It was two.
Oh, okay.
And it was the same company out of Maryland that had done it twice. I was like, you know what? I'm glad to be wrong. I think the concerns behind the civil liberties issue, and you guys are, there is no doubt in the next 10 years as things come along that that is a conversation that is going to holistically be. And I'm not an absolutist with anything. If I lived in, you know, on the south side of Chicago and you said, we'd like to put license plate readers, I'd be like, absolutely. You guys should probably have done that yesterday. So there's no two things are the same, right?
Sure.
But I really want to ask, aside from benefits, aside from technology, do you think that I firmly believe that the country is going to stay in a period of hardship financially for a while? And you start seeing it on LinkedIn when so-and-so is laying off, you know, 10% of their workforce. Do you guys, it's a lousy way to get where you need to be from a staffing perspective, but your agencies and the profession in general definitely benefit when times are harder.
No
and
doubt.
I don't say that because I'm happy for you, but do you feel like that will solve some of your problems, or is it just too early?
I don't know that it will solve it, but certainly, you know, throughout my 40 years of experience, when the economy is suffering, people tend to move toward a more secure job in government, and particularly in a police department. And so I think it could benefit us. But I think countering that, though, is a little bit of this, you know, anti-police sentiment, and the people have portrayed law enforcement as, you know, a profession that's not honorable, that's not one that you should seek out. And, you know, I know I've seen some protests where, you know, the police were lined up. I think this one was actually in San Francisco I was looking at. The police were lined up, and, you know, they have a lot of minority police officers, and there was this one black officer standing there, and this protester was giving him a hard time because he was black and a police officer. But when you think about it, that's what we need is, you know, if we want our police departments to represent the community, we need that diversity.
Absolutely.
So we don't need the people of color to say, no, I don't want to be a police officer.
Is there a strategy that you could implement with the HCBUs or anything of that nature to really try to recruit people of color? Because I think it's a great idea. And look, I was fortunate enough to live in the athletic dorms at Samford University and learned a lot when I was in college. And there is no doubt that certain people in certain places are treated differently. And I hate that, but I learned that at 20. But are there programs available through, you know, minority schools or the HCBUs that you guys have the ability to recruit out of to get kids that are, I mean, I say kids, 22, that are young, that are educated, to bring a next generation along and really help change the shift? Because you guys run the only organizations in local government that can appear on the national news. And that is almost for never good reasons. And I only know that because I have lived through it. Do you think that there is a strategy or anything there that you guys have thought about with recruiting? Because you'll go all over the place to get officers. There's no
Absolutely.
Doubt.
Absolutely. And we will. Actually, Billy, you're You have a strong association with Noble. I think yes. You probably could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so we advertise with the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives on their website, and a lot of the applicants, frankly, that we're getting lately are minority applicants.
That's great.
And females, which, you know, we it kind of ebbs and flows. You know, we'll have a few female applicants, and then we'll go a period of time where we don't have any. And lately, we've been able to hire 3 female officers, and so that's been really helpful for us too.
I'll close here with both of you. In the last 6 months that I sat in elected office, we provided the police 911. Was it 10%? 10% pay raises? It was close.
Well, if the one you're talking about, we had the 3% across the board for everybody, and then police and 911 got an additional 10%.
And so I'm always supportive of giving people a raise. But I also know that and you feel for every other community, because apparently right now in law enforcement, it is a zero-sum game of officers, because I imagine both of your agencies are taking lateral transfers more than they are taking new people, and that may be presumptuous, but I don't see people running to the industry at 20 years old.
Right.
Do you feel that it becomes a haves and have-nots conversation? And if you're running a deficit, I can assure you the community in the middle of nowhere, mm-hmm. who can afford
right.
to do the 10%, and that pulls on me, because the odds that I need a police officer in Alpharetta versus anywhere else in the state of Georgia is 50-50. And it is not a healthy environment that is created when all of the agencies of means have close to full pool and everybody else. And there are plenty of good, really nice metro Atlanta cities that can't afford to do what the two of you have done. I shudder at the thought of getting hurt or needing somebody I won't even pick out a municipality, but they're with, you can drive to any of them in 20 minutes. How do you guys combat that? And do you get pushback from those other municipalities at conferences to say, you're taking all our people?
I mean, I've heard that a little bit. Listen, we have been able to hire some lateral transfers, and I know Chief Grogan has as well. But I can tell you that pool of candidates, and what I would say good candidates, has shrunk. And unfortunately, we're all fishing from the same pond here. And so it's highly competitive, and it's just not like it used to be. And you're right, you don't have near as many people that are not certified that are looking for a career coming out as well. Now, we are, you know, we're hiring those the good candidates when they come in, but it's just a different time for all of us. And yes, we do have maybe some means that other agencies and other cities don't have, but I can assure you, I think nationally, this is a problem regardless of whether you're a wealthy and affluent community,
no question,
or a small community that's struggling, a big city like Atlanta that's several hundred down, Cobb County where I live, great agency, great police department, they're down a few hundred.
How many are you down?
So right now we're 108 authorized. That will change July 1st to 113, and we are down officially 7. I've got 3 or 4 more that we're about to hire, but we're around 7.
What about you, Chief Grogan?
We're down 10 right now, but we have like 4 conditional job offers that are out, so we're waiting for them to start. In answer to that question, I think there are. But I think, you know, it's also regional in how you compete. So somebody, say, in Middle Georgia is not competing for candidates with us.
That's probably fair.
Because they go from a kind of a – so they're competing against the agencies around them. Now, when somebody's looking to become a police officer in metro Atlanta, then they're looking at Alpharetta, Roswell, Sandy Springs, Dunwoody, Marietta, you know, all these agencies. But when you get outside of that, then they're really looking at that geographic area. And the pay just may be, the structure may be different. And I know police chiefs from all over the state, and they all have kind of the same challenges. And they don't begrudge any other agency for making more because they know that there's, you know, in some way, it may help them eventually.
Sure. Well, there is no doubt that if you are a police officer in Sandy Springs, you are probably going to fight more than you are in Milton.
Right.
You know, and that's just like part of it. But I would close here with both of you. Advertise your agency websites. How do people get in touch with you? Because, hey, look, if one person out there found either of you, I'd feel great.
Absolutely. Well, we have a specific site because, again, we're public safety, so I'm police, fire, and 911. We have adpscareers.com. That's our website for hiring specifically. And of course, we're on Twitter and Facebook. But if anybody interested in coming to work for us, that's the place to start, is adpscareers.com.
And ours is joindunwoodypolice.com. And we're paying $6,000 signing bonus.
Ooh.
So we'd love to have you.
We're doing 5,000. So, yes,
we are. Yes. Chief Grogan, Chief Robinson, I appreciate you guys for coming in today. It's been enlightening. I look forward to you guys hearing this with, you know, bits and pieces is coming up with, you know, the radio station 106.3, The Extra, is fabulous at promoting law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And I am confident, being in the listening area, that if you ever needed help, these guys would stand here with you. This whole office, and you guys have been set outside with me for about 15 minutes. Everybody here's great.
Yes, we appreciate the support.
Absolutely.
We do. Mm-hmm.
Guys, this has been another episode of the Ben Burnett Show. We will see you next week.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.